Good morning, Lansing. Tell me, Lansing, with your insights on the body, how do you generally perceive the human capacity to wisely heal itself?
As far as any one of us can tell, there is no known or predictable limit. Not only are there supposedly spontaneous miracles, but in fact, after a long period of time in some cases, people produce healing responses to things which have stifled them all their life until that time. I don't think there's any limit at all, Tim.
There is a saying there that essentially that the human being is an energy bundle of exponential potential, and that within us, of course, we have so many qualities and virtues, and yet the human race at present, we seem to be extremely challenged.
Yes, we do.
Yes. And of course, I see the fact that there's 6.4 billion of us in the biosphere, and at a quantum level, of course, essentially we're all connected. And yet here you are at present working with people on a very, very subtle level to sort of unlock this this creativity within them. Can you give us a verbal demonstration of what you do with the human being, with them in the, when they're in your hands?
I'd be glad to try. If you believe Einstein or Buddha or a wide variety of other historical masters of one level of consciousness or another, there really is no difference intrinsically between energy and matter. There are differences which we are conditioned to perceive. If you interact with a baby and you give it any permission or opportunity at all, it's not as interested in your eyes or your words or your movements by a wide margin as it is interested in the energy field you are. It looks around your head as though everybody had a halo. It looks at you in many ways which reveal, if you're willing to see them, that to the baby, to all of us when we begin, what we call energy is far more impactful, more appreciable to the senses than is physical matter. Over time, in order to follow the biologic imperatives that any species must, which are fit in, prepare for lean times, learn to adapt and behave in ways which the pride or tribe or whatever it is will reinforce, we learn to not notice as the means of not responding to what the rest of our group doesn't notice or respond to. That's as true for tigers and chimpanzees and meerkats as it is for humans. This process of learning not to notice and therefore not to respond is not the same as we have erased the circuitry. We've put it on deep standby. And what integrated awareness seeks to do for both individuals and we hope for the planet as a whole is to reactivate that circuitry, only now taking advantage of the life that each individual has already lived so that they can apply accumulated experience and wisdom to what was originally potential but then put on hold. We do this by touch, we do it by movement, we do it by increasing the individual's ability to sense energy again and to work with it directly, and also by teaching the people as a group or one by one to choose for themselves. They have to recognize it first, but then to choose for themselves what level of awareness in any given moment they want to bring to their interactions with other people, with other parts of themselves, which are not really separate but felt to be, and of course, with our mother herself. if, as humans, we continue to feel that we ourselves are a collection of parts, my hand instead of self-hand or self-in-hand, if we feel ourselves as a collection of parts, we're never going to feel ourselves to be a unity as a species. And if we cannot see that humans are operating as a collective, I don't know how very many people are going to make the leap to feel emotionally and viscerally our complete bond and inseparability from the planet as a whole. We'll treat whatever is not right in front of us, or which doesn't appear to be downstream from us, as though somehow it wasn't us. It didn't matter. We're having the largest single influence on the planetary ecosphere as a whole of any other life form that we're aware of. If we don't manage, by whatever means, to treat ourselves as a cooperative, consciously interacting force, I don't myself have a lot of hope that we will ever come to treat the Earth and ourselves as a active, bonded, consciously interacting whole. How would you do it if you didn't start it? If you don't belong to your family, how will you belong to your society? If you don't belong to your society, how will you belong to your species? If your species doesn't belong, how will you love the Earth?
Yes, we find here, particularly, I guess it comes from the male in many ways, has driven this particularly over the last so many thousand years. We've moved into our head and out of our heart.
Yes.
And I feel that this is a big problem, and as against
yes.
thinking that there is a problem. We feel that there's a problem. We need to take it back down into all our cells. And of course, if all our cells are a mirror of every other cell, and I guess this is how the animal kingdom, the animals live as a sort of a whole moving, flowing being, whereas we humans have sort of put everything into one particular area, which is above the neck.
I'm afraid that's true. I share your experience. I do have a hopeful perspective to offer for that.
Very good.
You said in your introduction, I believe, trillions of cells to describe one human.
Correct.
It seems to me beyond logic or reasonable imagination to assume that four or more trillion cells could cooperate to keep on from moment to moment producing you, Tim, and me, Lansing, unless they knew how to communicate with each other. And beyond communicating with each other, I don't see how they could do it if they didn't have some levels of supervision beyond a single cell or its components and the I that people say they are, I this, I that, which probably is mostly ego. There's got to be intermediate levels of managerial supervision. Everybody does eat, but nobody knows how to digest their food. Everybody does drink liquid, but nobody knows how to extract what's useful and get rid of the rest. But the body does. And that has to depend upon the central nervous system and its derivatives. And we have learned, by good luck, as much as anything else, ways in which to improve people's personality, conscious waking interaction with those supervisory parts inside themselves. And it's my experience, and that of actually tens of thousands of others, that those same interactions are the ones which we use to look at the world and see, here's another species that's part of us, here's another part of the planet, which I don't happen to stand on at the moment, but is still connected to me. That the very same communication pathways that can be made to operate consciously within individuals naturally incline them to apply the same awareness to the world as a whole.
Yes, that's our challenge, is to be able to do that. I remember when I was in Australia not so long ago, they had an Aboriginal person who had gone out into the desert about 1940, and nobody had seen him. And so a number of Aboriginals decided to go out and see if this person was still alive. And after about 45, 50 years, there was contact. And
really?
Yes. Finally, what happened was that one Aboriginal was able to track him down by looking at the soil that had, over sort of a period of days. And when they finally sort of caught a glimpse of each other, they slowly walked towards each other, and they stood about 200 meters off, away from each other, and they stood still, so still, and they just, what we perceived, looked at each other. They were as if they were reading each other from a distance, and it was, their bodies were obviously moving very subtly, and a lot of information was being exchanged. And then finally they moved closer and closer together, and then they stood beside each other and welcomed, and there was an embrace. Now, with the work that you do, I know that it's to do with touch, a lot of touch and a lot of movement, and you also have people sort of lying on their back and they move. Can you tell us how this system, this healing mythology that you've got, works to allow people to release anything that where they would have possibly suffered from coming through the birth canal into this world?
Yes, certainly. Just let me say what a great image that was. Thank you, Tim. When we look at the way our bodies function in the present adult, it seems to me not much different from a tree, if you're willing to look at ourselves as either an infant or a zygote, being the seed or acorn or from whatever the tree grew. There was a potential, and then the environment interacted with that potential, and together you get a tree, or you or me. The way the human brain develops in embryo, at a very early stage, before there's a heartbeat, very early stage, few weeks, a particular little layer of cells, which will one day become the nervous system, the skin, and some other parts, divides itself into halves, one larger than the other. The smaller half becomes your brain, your central nervous system, and all of your skin. And though I don't know a way to design a double-blind test to prove it, anecdotally, over many, many thousands of people, it appears consistent that touch is prioritized by the brain and the rest of the central nervous system as being somehow imbued with the meaning of experience rather than the experience itself. And accumulatively, that then becomes the meaning of life for that person. So that how we're touched shapes the values with which we see everything outside of ourselves. And from human perspective, the world is outside, although you and I probably don't feel that much. But it is the usual thing. And so touch to an adult, if it is rendered by a person conscious and energetically occupied, congruent with their physical structure, conveys a meaning to the central nervous system and the general awareness of the person, usually outside their life's experience, which allows them to reformulate their values. I'm delighted to say that none of us have even formulated an idea of how to choose that for other people, that there seems to be nothing programmable about it. But the fact of occupied, congruent touch and presence seems to activate dormant circuitry in the human, as a result of which they feel more belonging and less separate, themselves, their family, the world. If someone has a physical disease, this is particularly useful because they get in better touch with the part of the body that needs to respond to heal that. If they have an emotional or a spiritual issue, it's nice to make the connections so they don't feel isolated or cut off or helpless or despairing. But in the context of your life's work, it also carries with it the ability and, in fact, the propensity. When you walk out and see a flower, you see everything. When you walk through grass, you feel everything. When you stand by a tree, you feel everything. The only really consistent challenge, other than willingness to undergo the experience, that we find for people is that the whole world is a lot to feel all at one time. And so we try to break it down into stages for folks so that they don't get overwhelmed by going all the way from disconnected and separate to connected and part of the whole. It's a lot, like taking a baby to an adult without any intervening childhood. In this case, though, we're running it backwards, from adulthood back to infancy. But same thing applies. And it works. The pragmatics of it is that almost everyone heals, which means to me and to you that if enough of us do, we can start to be caretakers of our earth instead of users. But if you don't take care of yourself, you don't see why you should take care of everything outside yourself either.
And so as a person, as an ordinary person like me who say came to you, what would you say, okay, Tim, come in, take a walk, sit down, you'd feel my ambience, my vibe?
You mean on the table with hands or on the floor? Of course, my friend, it would depend upon what desire you actually had that brought you there. There's no formula to this. It's the skill of an integrated awareness teacher to create on the spot the response network that each individual needs, because they have learned how to produce more choices and more feelings within themselves without being overwhelmed. Babies are not taught to sit up, walk, talk. They figure it out for themselves by environmental cues, which the adults have generally lost track of. Those mechanisms in the system which allow the baby to learn to do that are still there. They're just heaped over by a bunch of stuff. But if you contact them, if you speak baby to an adult, I don't mean baby talk like goo goo goo. I mean if you communicate with them in the way that they originally were prepared to be connected with when they were babies, then those capacities within them reawaken. Since they now have an accumulated life experience, most people figure out really quickly what to do with this new capacity, whether it's start by healing themselves physically or emotionally, or change to a life purpose which serves the whole instead of only a limited personal gain or whatever. the three differences between energetics and table touch and work on the floor, which, by the way, is done in all positions, not just lying on your back, sitting and kneeling and crawling and lying on your side and everything else are all utilized. The business is very simple. On the floor, working on yourself or exploring your own inner matrix is done under the guidance of a teacher who's spent thousands of hours doing that themselves. And it's generic enough from person to person that you can ask everyone to make a certain movement and they'll all do it differently. They'll all follow the same apparent instruction by a completely individual form of expression, which takes them directly into how their own nervous system and their own perceptual nets and their own consciousness operates. In terms of energy and expanded awareness states, most of that is done by the teacher generating such a state in themselves and being a template or a tuning fork to which all the other consciousness instruments can align and resonate. Table work is done because the particular challenge the individual faces at the moment, it's really a lot to ask someone to suddenly figure out how to solve cancer or what to do about MS or what to do with the problem that global warming is a fact, not somebody's fanciful imagination. It seems that all of those kinds of things are a lot for an individual. So table work is done to help people pass the stages at which it's just too much to do on your own. The same way babies have to learn to walk, but all loving parents provide fingers for them to hold on to while they're practicing. We regard all three of those formats as what color socks you're going to wear that day. They're all okay. It just kind of depends on the day and the circumstances and the wish.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I find that when I'm going in nature, when I go out in nature, by a river or to a beach or up in the hills, I have this incredible love for the world. And what is this that makes us feel so happy? I mean, some people can go out there and you see tears down their face when they're among or amidst nature. This, of course, is a great healing process, but what is it that makes us want to love so much and feel so much joy?
I believe you answered this question yourself earlier, but if you don't mind my plagiarizing you, I'll restate it.
Certainly.
Everything in the universe, apparently physical, apparently energetic, apparently whatever, vibrates. There's nothing that isn't in movement. Even the cosmic microwave background radiation patterns, which astrophysicists are so fond of referring to, have been recently reduced to basically that it's a sound, which apparently, if you look at a computer information, doesn't vary much from the chant that people have been doing for I don't know how many thousands of years, that there's a tonal quality, a tuning or a harmonic or an aesthetic to the universe. I can't speak for everyone, I'm not that smart, but listening to you and speaking for myself, I believe that for both of us, when we walk in a river or stand in a forest or have a view of a waterfall, that what we feel is more and more of ourselves attuning to the vibration of the heart. And that as we attune with our consciousness, so we attune with our energy. As we attune with our energy, gradually we raise the physical body's vibrations to the same thing. consciousness is instantaneous, energetic is rather quick, physically it takes a lot longer. So we may need to repeat the first two endlessly, hence meditation and dance and you and I liking to walk in and along rivers.
True, yes. You see, to bring about positive change when we have so much love, there's a lot of people there in the world who, among their family and particularly even in the third world where they are more aligned with nature, it's like the Bushmen in the Kalahari in southern Africa. I'm sure there that they see these fantastic sunsets or sunrises. And I'm sure also they're aware there that the climate is changing, which is a sort of like a marker to say that within the global body there is change. And I'm just wishing to be able to find ways in which to empower the individual or to be more involved in the global community, because you start with your family and your loved ones and then you extend out to your local town, etc., or city. And of course what you're saying is there that it's all locked up inside us and we have to find ways to let it out.
Some of it is locked up, but I believe a great deal of it is untapped potential, and rather than locked, nobody just bothered to open the door to that room and walk in. That as very little children or even as infants, for whatever reasons, that door kind of got a do not enter sign put on it. There's no lock, just a belief that it's not okay. And as a result, it's like somebody who's actually living on 1% or less of their own genuine income and don't even know about the other 99%. So I don't want to get too political, but let's just say that it's not being used directly consciously by the person for the values that they themselves would most want to display on the planet. But if you give them, not a key, but just knock the sign off and kick the door open a little bit and say, take a look, most people stick their heads in and then rush in, to be honest. I don't want to pretend for a moment that I'm not aware of the severity of the, I'm going to say, crisis that Earth faces primarily as a result of humans. But the reason that I don't despair but have conviction that we can turn this around is because I have seen so many individuals turn it around. And while I don't know what number of individuals is required to be, the old 100th monkey story?
Very much so.
Okay, I don't know what number of individuals of us is required, but there's got to be some number at which it rolls over into, oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me, Mother, I had my priorities all messed up. Let me see where I can start cleaning things up and making a contribution instead of making a withdrawal. I don't believe that it will ever come to pass except by some fundamental minimum number of individuals who choose that it shall come to pass.